Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. Today is Tuesday, January 26th. Almost forgot the date. Kind of like hanging in there with that. And we have a really exciting guest on today. Before I introduce him, I just want to remind you of a couple of upcoming shows. In February, we are going to have Suzanne Ward. She's going to be on February 9th. She's going to be talking about some conversations that she has with her deceased son. She lost him when he was 17, and she has had many conversations with him, and he talks about a wide array of topics. And I am asking you, the listeners, if you will help me choose a couple of topics that Susie can come on and talk to us about that Matthew has given her. And you can find out his information at www.matthewbooks.com. And she wants us to pick a couple of different topics. So please feel free to do that. And you can email me at talkintoangels@aol.com, TLKN2ANGELS.com. I really appreciate your feedback. We're going to have, at the end of February, we're going to have Susa Scalora talking to us about her incredible book, Evidence of Angels. If you've not had an opportunity to see that, you can go to www.myth.com and check that out. Susa's an incredible artist, and I love her book, so you'll enjoy her as well. But today we have Stephen Horn, and Stephen is a wonderful herbalist. I think he's a magnificent healer. I've worked with him professionally, and he has, really helped me get on the road to health. I really appreciate all the information he has on his website and just the wonderful things he does and gives back to people. So welcome to the show today, Stephen. How are you?
I'm great. Glad to be here.
Great. And you're actually here today talking to us about a new book that you're writing. So you're an author as well.
Yes, I'm an author. And this book is actually about emotional healing, not about the physical, herbal, nutritional part of healing. I've been doing emotional healing work with myself and with my clients since 1986, and I do it, it's probably about half of what I do, and I've mostly written about the herbs and the nutrition and everything, and this is my first real major foray into writing about the emotional side of healing.
Great. Can you just give everybody, I didn't really go into your background, can you just give us a little bit about your background so the listeners know?
Yeah, I'm a professional herbalist. I'm a professional member of the American Herbalist Guild. I've been involved in natural healing full-time for 30 years. I've been interested in herbs and nutrition since I was in my teens. And so what was sort of a thing I did at first to help myself became my vocation. And I have a company called Tree of Light Publishing. We produce educational materials on natural healing. And I also have a business with Kimberly Ballas where we do consulting and sell some herbal products. And my side of that business is called ABC Herbs.
Great.
So that's a little bit about my background.
Awesome. Yeah, and I have to say that you just have a wonderful, I just love getting on your website. I can find pretty much anything I'm looking for. And to know that now that this emotional component is going to be, you know, a part of what you're doing, I think that's incredible, at least, you know, made more public. You sent me the first two chapters of this book that is called Heal Yourself, Heal Your World. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, I've got a different title. But that was kind of my preliminary title. But with talking with my son, we're actually going to call the book The Heart's Key to Health, Happiness, and Success. And the reason I'm doing that is because, you know, in our culture, we actually downplay the importance of emotions and feelings and the heart. We tend to look at thinking as supreme. We talk about positive thinking. We talk about positive mental attitude. And we relegate logic and this sort of thing to a higher position than the heart. In fact, if you think about it, most of us have received message after message after message in our lives from parents and other people that our feelings don't matter. You know, don't cry, wipe that stupid grin off your face, don't you be angry with me, et cetera. All of what you're saying that our feelings are invalid and wrong. And this is a shame because really, your feelings just are. The way you feel about something is just the way you feel about it. And that feeling isn't going to change just because someone says you shouldn't feel that way. If someone says you shouldn't feel that way, does it change the way you feel?
No, and I've always said, if you say something to somebody like, well, this makes me feel, and they're like, no, it doesn't. Well, sure it does. You can't tell me how I feel.
Right. So when you have that, it's like people say, your feelings don't matter, your feelings aren't important, your feelings are wrong. Well, feelings are not right or wrong. Feelings just are. And one of the things I've learned is that there are appropriate ways or constructive ways of utilizing our feelings or dealing with our feelings, and then there are destructive ways of utilizing or dealing with our feelings. One of the reasons why the feeling aspect is so important, as I start off with my book, is we talk about, this positive mental thing and goal setting, which I think is a really good thing, but it's missing something important, because how many times have we, seen something we wanted, a relationship, some car or product or other thing that we, decided we went after, and after we got it, we found out it really wasn't what we expected or what we wanted, and maybe we were, unhappy or disappointed with it. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Lots of times. So what we need to understand is we need to look a little deeper and ask ourselves, why do we want the things that we want? And as I point out in my book, if you really sit with that long enough and think about it, what you'll realize is that everything that you want in life, everything that you desire because you perceive it will make you feel better, that it will bring you happiness, it'll bring you joy, it'll make you feel loved, or in other words, it'll give you some kind of emotional payoff, right?
It does, and you addressed that right up front, and I actually worked the chapter as you laid it out, and it was funny because when I turned the page and read what you had next, I just had to laugh. It was exactly the kind of stuff I wrote.
Yeah, because what you want to understand is that your ultimate goal in life is to feel good. Now, if you understand that that is what your innermost motivation is to want to feel good, then what that's saying is your feelings are very important, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and therefore, if you don't understand your feelings, if you're not in touch with your feelings, if you're in denial about your feelings and you're trying to suppress your feelings or make them go away, you're not in touch with what's driving your choices in life. And this is why we often make choices that ultimately make us unhappy without realizing it, is because we don't realize that we're making those choices, we're desiring the things we're desiring, because of our emotional needs. And someone may be, promising us that, yes, if you buy this product, you'll be happy, or yes, if you get in this relationship, you'll be happy. But that may not be true. And the interesting thing is that what might contribute to your happiness may be different from what will contribute to my happiness, right?
Right. We're each different.
So ultimately, if we're not in touch with our heart, we really don't understand what's motivating us and driving us. Now, there's a real good reason why we're encouraged to suppress our feelings, and that is because the more we're in denial of our feelings, the more we can be manipulated, because we don't understand ourselves well enough to understand what's motivating us, what's driving our actions. And so really successful marketers and advertisers know that the only way to get people to buy something is to basically engage them emotionally and promise them an emotional payoff. I mean, if you look at, the way, say, cars are sold, they're not talking about the car from the standpoint of its if it's real logical features. they're appealing to some emotional thing, the need for your family to be safe, the need for you to have class or prestige or whatever, but they're all driven at emotional responses, and that's true of all successful advertising. It's targeted at your emotions. So the premise of the book I'm writing is that when you understand your heart and you understand your emotions is when you really start to be able to take control of your life and move you in a direction that will actually really help you to be healthy, to be happy, and to be successful. And I define being successful as achieving your ultimate aim, which is to feel good. So, do you want me to just keep talking?
Sure.
If you have any comment or question, just interrupt me.
Okay.
But there are several key premises I'm working on. One of them is that when think of emotions as energy, because really emotions are a form of energy. Your emotions, as the word suggests, are the evokers of motion. They are basically the energy that helps us take action. You can logically think something, but you won't actually do anything about it unless your emotions are engaged to make you move. So when we talk about the mind-body connection, the connection between the mind and the body, or the bridge between the mind and the body, is our feelings, our emotions. And this is also why the positive mental attitude thing sometimes doesn't work, is because you may, sit there and write your goal down and whatever, but if there's a huge emotional block or an unresolved emotional issue that's in your heart that you haven't looked at or dealt with, then that thing that you are focusing on in your mind will never translate down into action in the physical world. And so it's unblocking these things and getting a person back in touch with their feelings and understanding that their feelings are important, that is the primary route to healing. It's about bringing those emotions out so that people don't suppress them anymore. So I talked about using your emotions destructively and using them constructively. There are two ways that we use our emotions negatively. One is that we suppress them, that is, that we deny that they're there, we try to make them go away, we pretend they're there. And the other one is to vent them. And venting I define as making other people and the situations in our life responsible for how we feel. So I'm going to talk briefly about each one of those, and then I'll talk about the one constructive way to use your emotions. So when you suppress your emotions, you're really suppressing yourself. You're suppressing your life energy. If you look at a little child, they're very emotional, right?
Right.
Now, they don't know how to channel that emotional energy, but they're loaded with emotional energy, right?
Oh, yeah, and they're great.
Yeah, and most of the time they are happy, right?
Yeah.
Unless they're being abused.
Exactly.
Most children are happy, they're delightful, they're engaged in life. They're very positive, and that's our kind of natural state, is to be happy and positive and engaged in life. And the fact that children are so emotionally free is also why they're so flexible. Notice how kids are just they're not stiff, and they don't move with, like stiffness and whatever. They once they learn to walk and everything, they have kind of that natural, flow with the energy of their bodies.
Right.
Well, when you suppress emotions, the only way to actually get an emotion to go away is to breathe shallowly so that you decrease energy production in your body and tense the muscles that, in other words, since emotion is trying to make you move, you lock the muscles and tense them so that you can't move. You get it?
Yeah. So an example would be, let's say if if we're out and somebody, like, you know, we're kids and we're out and somebody wants to, they say something and we want to cry, but instead of crying, we just kind of clam up?
Right.
Okay.
So you hold your breath,
mm-hmm.
and you tense all the muscles that would be involved in the process of crying.
Okay.
So as we get older, you notice that as we get older, we get stiffer, right?
Yeah.
And most people who are older are very shallow breathers, and their bodies become increasingly rigid and inflexible and so forth. So they lose passion, right?
Yeah.
Now you look at someone who is very charismatic, and what's one of the things that we associate with being very charismatic?
Well, they're usually pretty active and joyful and...
and passionate, right?
Yeah, a lot of passion.
Which is passionate is another way of saying emotional, right?
Okay.
They're letting their emotional energy be channeled into something, you know, that they really want to do and they really love doing. So what happens is suppressing emotions ultimately leads us to become shallow breathers, tense, and also because there are different organ system energies that are involved in different emotions, it actually will eventually lead to physical disease and so forth. I've never met anybody who is chronically ill who doesn't have serious emotional issues.
Mm-hmm.
And since the emotional issues are driving their choices in life, then those emotional issues are part of what is driving them to eat poorly, to not exercise, to get it?
Yes.
Because the emotions are motivating their choices. Now, the other thing I mentioned was that you can vent your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what that's like, is when someone makes us responsible for how they feel.
Right.
Right? Well, and none of us like that because we don't really, you know, what makes one person angry doesn't make another person angry, right?
Right, exactly.
What makes one person sad doesn't make another person sad. So you're not responsible for the way other people emotionally react. Now, you can be responsible to other people. You can be compassionate. You can try to be understanding and so forth. But you're ultimately not responsible for the way they choose to deal with their emotions. But when you're venting anger or venting fear or venting grief, those are the three primary emotions that basically signal we're off track in some way. When we vent those emotions, we're trying to place the responsibility for those emotions outside of ourselves, which means we're giving away our power to our life circumstances and other people. Because we aren't using our emotions or understanding our emotions to better our lives, we're trying to get something outside of ourselves to change before we can change how we feel. And that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. It's much harder to control everything outside of you.
Right. So the constructive way to deal with our emotions is to feel them. And that's scary.
Yeah.
Because when
that's where people get hung up.
Yeah. Now see what happens. I call feeling your emotion listening to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're feeling an emotion, and this is the big key, when you're allowing yourself just to sit with the fact and say, yes, I feel angry right now, or yes, I feel hurt or sad right now, or yes, I feel afraid right now, okay? And you're not going to try to blame someone else for that, and you're not going to try to make it go away. You're just going to listen to it. What happens is that emotion will help you understand how your choices and your decisions are leading you to not be happy so that you can change your choices. You can change what you're doing. You can alter your life course. But if you never listen to the emotion, you don't understand what you're doing that's causing you to suffer. Now, I'm gonna back off here for a second and say one of the main premises in my book is that I really believe in the concept, more than the idea of the law of attraction, the law of the harvest, the law of cause and effect. That is that all of the energy we put out we draw back or reap like energy. Mm-hmm. And the thing that is missing from most people, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the power of positive thinking. But if you actually read what Scripture says, it doesn't say, as a man thinketh in his head, so is he. It says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Well, how does the heart think? The heart thinks through feeling. So what I'm saying is the emotional energy that we're allowing to drive our choices reaps back more of the same. So when you act in anger, when you act from a motivation of anger, whether that anger is conscious or unconscious, you will reap back more conflict in your life. When you act out of fear, you will reap more scary experiences in your life. You get it?
Right.
The emotional energy that you put out into the world will attract back experiences that mirror that emotional energy back to you.
Right. In the classes that I teach, I describe the emotional body. One of the ways I describe it is it's the megaphone to the universe that
Makes
as loud as the emotions in terms of communicating with the universe.
Yes. In fact, the heart is really the doorway to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
The physical world basically is what creates distinction and separation. But the spiritual world is what creates connection. And in this plane of existence, that connection is experienced through the heart,
mm-hmm.
through our feelings. So we are either experiencing that connection or we're experiencing disconnection. And the more we're cut off from our feelings, the more we can't really hear the voice of the divine or feel the connection we have with other things. And other people.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you a practical example of what I'm talking about, and I'll start with the one that was one of the most difficult for me to learn to deal with, which is anger.
Okay.
Okay? So we all know what venting anger is like, right?
Right.
Okay. But if you think about what is happening when someone is venting anger, is that they're aggressively trying to control other people, right? Or other situations outside of themselves.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't work because ultimately, while you have influence on the outside world, you don't control it. And so, and when you try to use anger to control your children, to control your spouse, to control, you know, people in the workplace or whatever, ultimately you create alienation and conflict. So some of us, seeing angry people and saying, we don't want to be like that or whatever, we go run to the opposite extreme. And what do? We suppress our anger, right?
Right.
We're never going to be angry. I'm never going to lose my temper. I'm never going to blah, 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 blah. Now, when you go to the opposite extreme, what happens is you wind up sort of becoming this people-pleasing kind of doormat personality that you often give in to things that you really don't want to give into to avoid conflict, right?
Right.
So you allow other people to take control of you.
Mm-hmm. But that builds.
Huh?
That builds up in people.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I have a family member who's exactly like that.
Yeah, it does. And so both of those are not constructive ways to deal with anger. But anger has an important lesson because anger has to do with something called our personal boundary. And our personal boundary is basically this, if you imagine there's a border that separates what is in what you're in control of, what you're responsible for. The word responsible means able to respond. In other words, what I can actually respond to and do something about versus what is outside of my responsibility and outside of my control, and that I'm not able to do something about. So anger is about finding your personal boundary. When you start to just feel your anger instead of venting it or denying it, your anger helps you start learning to see your personal boundary and to take control of your life. The lesson that anger will teach you if you learn to sit with it is self-control. Mm-hmm. It means I'm not going to try to control you, but I'm also not going to let you control me. You got it?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so when you develop a strong personal boundary, then you are in charge of your own well-being. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You don't let other people push you into decisions that you don't feel are in your best interest, but you also are unwilling to push other people into decisions that aren't in their best interest. So you start putting out an energy of respect for self and others, and what is that going to reap back?
Respect from others.
Respect from others. You see? That's how the whole process works. And there's similar lessons for grief and fear, which I think we have time to go into, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
So let's take the emotion of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like to say that anger is the power to say no. All right? So anger is the power to say no to what we don't want, what doesn't work for us, what would hurt or harm us. Okay? So it allows us to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, contrasting that, we have an emotion that we call desire. And desire is the emotion that allows us to say yes. Okay? It's the emotion that allows us to let things in that are good for us. And most of us actually use the word love synonymous with desire. So when we say, I love ice cream, we're really saying, I desire ice cream because eating ice cream makes me feel good, right?
Mm-hmm. And it tastes good.
Okay. Most people, when they say, I love you, they're saying the same thing. I desire you. I feel good when I'm around you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So desire is really self-love. Desire is not a bad thing. It's the thing that we want good things for ourselves. So when we have something that means something to us, that was something that contributed to our joy, to our happiness, to our emotional well-being, and we lose it, we experience grief.
Mm-hmm.
And grief is that feeling of emptiness or loss or that longing, or it's an expression of desire, the desire we have that thing that meant so much to us. Now, if I suppress my grief, then here's kind of the scenario of what would happen. I would go, gosh, you know, I fell in love, I got betrayed, I got hurt, that really was bad, I'm never going to fall in love again, right?
Right.
I'm never going to be open to desire again. So I shut down my heart. And if you do that repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly, you become hard of heart. Now, if you ever meet people who are hard of heart, they're very cold, they're very calculating, they're very logical, and they really are not compassionate or empathetic of others at all.
Mm-hmm.
Their attitude is basically tough, right? Grow
right.
up, okay? I don't. If what I hurt you, you know, what I said hurt you, then quit being a baby. It's your problem. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's not a very good place to be in, because basically you're denying yourself pleasure, you're denying yourself joy, you're closing yourself off to a source of being able to connect with people and connect with things. Now, if you vent grief, then you go into the pity party, the victim mentality. Oh, pity poor me. Oh, look at me. And you reach out to other people constantly for sympathy. Now, there's a difference between sympathy and empathy. Empathy is, I can understand your feeling. I can relate to how you feel. It's tough, isn't it? Sympathy is basically the rescuer thing of wanting someone to rescue you from your pain, right?
Right.
And it becomes like an addiction, a drug. If I get sympathy from others, I get this little temporary fix of feeling better, da-da-da. And so I become clingy and needy and possessive. And, ew, gosh, I think of people who become that way as kind of being sticky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're, and they kind of make you want to push them away.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you could be, you'll be empathetic with them at first, and then you get tired of it. You just want to, like, okay, go away, you know, get a life. So what will happen if you sit with your grief? And this is a lesson I learned for myself when I had my youngest son died of SIDS at 2 months of age. Mm. And because I'd been doing emotional healing work for many years, I realized that the experiences that we run away from haunt us, and the experiences that we embrace and walk through help us grow. So I decided to embrace the experience, and I let myself grieve, and I let myself go through the pain of that loss. And what was interesting is, as I came out of it about 6 months later, I had, the best way I can describe it is, I made peace with death. What I learned through that was that nothing that I have in this life is permanent. Everything dies, everything leaves, everything ends. And having made peace with that, what I learned was to be grateful for what I have right now. You got it?
Yes.
It means that I can open up and say yes and let in everything that I have right now. Because tomorrow I may not have it, so I might as well appreciate it today. Mm-hmm. You see?
Yeah, but I do want to say, because I think for the people that might be out there listening that need to know this, grieving, there's never a bad time, really, to grieve. And you can grieve stuff from the past, too. And this is one of the things that when I start working with people that kind of come up, and I do a different type of grieving work. But, you know, what I get the resistance from, because it's part of the class, the coursework that I have them go through, when we get to this part that I call the grieving process, there can be, sometimes there's a lot of resistance to it. And their expression is, I feel like I'm dying.
Yes.
I don't want to have that kind of pain.
Yes.
And the motivation is, if you allow yourself to move into it and sit with it and go through it, when you come out of it, you're so much lighter, there's so much more room for joy, because you're not storing that old grief pattern and that old emotion inside of your body anymore.
Yeah. Well, grieving is about being able to let go. And what happens is, and there, I describe this in the book I'm writing, when you are in love, okay, when you're experiencing pleasure, your blood flows to the extremities of your body to open up your senses and take things in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you experience pain and you go into, like, shock, you see the color, you know, drain out of a person's face, and all the blood rushes inward, away from the surface of the body, to basically, like, withdraw, okay? And you experience that as the sensation of pressure in your heart and your chest and so forth.
Right.
Well, when you grieve, and grieving isn't just crying, grieving is like sobbing. Grieving is letting yourself really feel the pain and letting your body actually, you know, people, I'm sure if you've done this kind of work, people convulse, right? They're shake, right?
Yes.
When you let yourself grieve, and it does, it feels like you're going to die. It feels like you're, you know, that this pain won't end. But what's amazing is when you do let yourself grieve, you let yourself go wail at the sky if you have to, okay, to express that pain without trying to make someone else responsible for it, okay. And that often happens easiest when you're sitting with someone who is empathetic, that can allow you to do that and hold you in a space of compassion while you do it, especially if it's an old hurt. But when you let go, all that blood is pushed back into the extremities, and it's like it helps you open back up to let in things to replace it. When you're forever clinging to what you lost, you have not, and you haven't allowed yourself to grieve, you have basically closed off the space to let something new in. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah,
so
it makes a lot of sense to me. I see it a lot in my clients.
So once you've grieved, once you've felt and expressed your pain, let go of it, and the pain is really an understanding of how much that meant to you. It allows you to open up and experience the pleasure again, okay, and and appreciate it in the moment that you have it. In fact, the ultimate thing that you learn from working through grief is gratitude.
Mm.
It's just to be thankful for all the good things you have, to appreciate what you have when you have it, to appreciate people in your life who mean something to you and tell them so. And so that's a really powerful one, and one that is really needed in our society, because we have made grief and heartache and pain, we tell people so much to stuff that it's really sad. In most traditional cultures, when people like lost a loved one, the tribe or the society made space for them to grieve for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what like the average leave here in the United States is 3 to 5 days from a job.
Yeah.
I mean Suck it up.
We don't allow people enough space to grieve.
Mm-hmm.
And it does create lots and lots of problems for us. Let's, before we run out of time, let's talk about the other one, fear.
Okay.
Okay? So if grief is associated with desire and the ability to say yes, to open up to things, and anger with the ability to say no and close down to things, fear has to do with choice.
Hmm.
Okay, we're forever having to choose. And choosing can be scary, because we might make a choice that results in pain, and we might make a choice that results in pleasure, and how do I know which is which? And especially when I have a situation where every choice looks like it's going to bring me pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that is just, that's scary, okay? Making choices is scary. And one of the reasons why making choices is so scary, because it wasn't so scary when we were little. We made lots of choices. We went out and explored the world. We got into all kinds of things, okay? And sometimes we got hurt. We touched hot stoves. We dropped things on our toes. We fell off our tricycle and skinned our knee. But we kept going out and trying. We kept making choices. At some point in our lives, we enter into this thing with parents and school and everyone else that starts punishing us for making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn to be afraid to do things because we might be wrong, because we might make the wrong choice. And so we become more and more paralyzed, and we become more and more locked into, following the kind of path that we always follow because it's the path we're familiar with. And we lose the courage to make choices. Now, when we vent fear, okay, remember, venting is making other people responsible for how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
Then what we do is we turn our life over to the control of other people. We listen to experts, we listen to other people, and we do what they tell us to do, irregardless of whether we feel it's right or not, because we're afraid to make our own choice. And I see this a lot because I work in natural healing with people who are afraid to choose anything that their doctor doesn't approve of. Right?
Yeah.
You've probably seen the same thing, right?
I have.
Yeah, the doctor is the expert. He knows what's best for me, blah, blah. Well, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, right? Okay? And ultimately, when you go to a doctor and you agree to a surgery or something, what does he have you do? Has you sign a paper saying that you accept responsibility and the risks, right?
Right, yeah.
So he's not responsible for you. He's telling you you're responsible for you, although he sometimes makes you and I see this a lot with medical people, but I also see it a lot with alternative people who use fear to manipulate people into doing what they say,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
If you don't do this, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you will, maybe you won't. That's not their decision, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay? Now, so we live in a society where we have lots of people venting fear, and it also happens that when scary things happen, then, politicians get up and say, we need to do this, blah, 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 and we'll often listen to that because we're grasping for something to make us feel secure, right?
Right.
Now, that's a disempowering thing with fear. Now, if you suppress fear, this is an interesting thing that happens. Since fear is basically, you know, a stress response basically is pumping these hormones and neurotransmitters and everything through your body, they're priming you for action, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then that, if you try to suppress that, you have to do something. You have to take that energy of all those stress hormones running through your body, and you have to put it somewhere. And so the way that people suppress fear, and this was the last thing I learned that kind of made this all fall into place for me, is you choose a choice that's a non-choice. You drink, you smoke, you take drugs, you go shopping, you you play computer games, you watch TV, you basically create obsessive, compulsive, addictive choices. You got it?
Yeah.
You overeat. So whenever you are feeling afraid, you eat. Okay? And every time we find ourselves faced with a behavior where we're doing it addictively or compulsively and unconsciously, it's because we're running away from our fears. And that means we're running away from the hard choices that we make in life. Well, the solution is this. Okay, when you go to an amusement park and you ride on the roller coaster and you ride on a lot of these rides, what pumps through your body?
Adrenaline
and stress hormones.
Right.
But what do we call that? Do we call it fear?
No.
We call it excitement.
Yeah.
Right? Excitement.
Yeah.
Well, the excitement comes from embracing the challenge. You see?
Okay.
Fear turns into excitement the moment I decide to embrace the challenge and I tackle it. Then all that emotional energy that before I was allowing to paralyze me suddenly is primed into getting me to do something. See, I've never been in combat, but I've done emotional healing work with people who have, and I've talked to people who have. Nobody who goes into a war isn't afraid, right?
Right.
There's no way you could go through that experience without feeling the pumping of stress hormones. The difference between the coward and the brave is the brave person acts in spite of their fear, and the coward doesn't. You get it?
Yes.
So when you have the courage, you're feeling fear, and you have the courage to make the best choice you can, even if you're not sure whether it's right, you just make the best choice you can and go with it, you start to become brave. You start to exhibit something called courage. Courage is the ability to choose a course of action in spite of your fear. And the more you exercise courage, the more you gain self-confidence. Because, yes, you're going to make mistakes, but you'll learn from your mistakes. In fact, if you look at the process of learning, when you were learning to walk or you were learning to talk, you made numerous mistakes. And nobody cared, right?
Right.
Everybody said when you fell down when you were learning to walk, oh, you can do it, right?
Right, yep, get back up and try again.
Get back up and try again, you can do it. But somewhere, as we get older, we get this idea that the first time we try something, we ought to be able to do it right, right?
Yes.
And that's nonsense. We learn through a process of trial and error. We make choice, well, that didn't quite work out. Let me see if I can adjust this and try it a little bit different and so forth. And so the only way out of the fear and out of the compulsions and out of the addictions is to start looking at your life, listening to the fear, and realizing what choices am I running away from? You see?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, this is about accepting responsibility for the fact that when I choose something, yes, there will be a consequence, but if it turns out to have been a consequence that I don't like, I change. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. It doesn't mean I'm stupid. It doesn't mean I'm... It just means that choice didn't work. So that's and as you learn to deal constructively with all these emotions, then you start to guide yourself into a place where you experience more happiness, more joy, more peace, because you become responsible or able to respond to you.
Right. And then, of course, you find yourself being surrounded by more people of that same nature.
Exactly, because you start choosing people who match your energy. In fact, we're always choosing people in relationships who match our energy. The what we choose is people who mirror our energy. So when I suppressed anger, I was always attracting myself into relationships with people who vented anger. And we got to play this little blame game, right?
Mm-hmm.
On each other. When in fact, when I woke up and I really started to see this, the person who suppresses anger and the person who vents anger both have problems with personal boundaries, right?
Right.
So they're mirroring each other. They're both showing each other that we don't know how to control ourselves, and we're trying to, you know, change the way we feel by controlling other people. The person who's suppressing anger is trying to keep other people from being angry with them by giving in. You see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're also trying to control the other person. So your relationships, the kind of people that you're attracted to, are actually a good mirror for what you need to work on emotionally. So if you find yourself being drawn into relationships with people who are hard-hearted, then maybe you need to take a look at how you're dealing with your own grief, you see?
Right.
Or if you find yourself attracted to people who are addictive and compulsive, you need to look at how do I handle my own fear? And as you do that, you change the way you respond to your emotions, and that changes the kind of people you're attracted to in your life. Because remember, ultimately, as I said in the beginning, your emotions are driving all your choices.
Mm-hmm.
And that which we're aware of, we're in control of. But that which we're unaware of controls us.
Yeah, and so your book will essentially, you know, just in the first two chapters, it looks like it's a book that kind of walks you through a process. Is that how the book continues on?
Yeah, the book walks you through a process of explaining, you know, the whole concept about the emotions and about the energy, and then it takes you through each of the three primary emotions that indicate we're off track in our lives, anger, fear, and grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about what happens when you vent it, what happens when you suppress it, both physically and emotionally. And then I talk about how to deal with it constructively, and I give exercises, things that you can do to start dealing constructively with that emotion.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, again, I will repeat that, you know, as I was reading these first two chapters, I went ahead and did, instead of just reading it, I wanted to have the experience, and I did the assignment, and, you know, as I read the next couple of pages, felt like the next couple of pages were written about me, as if, you know, you had written them after I did the work. So, you know, you're really right on in the book and what's going on, and this may be extremely oversimplified, but it's really helping you to take responsibility. It's about taking responsibility for your life.
Yes, it is. And the only way to do that is by becoming aware of what's motivating you,
mm-hmm.
which is to become aware of your emotional needs.
Right.
And because if you're not aware of that, you're not in control. You're not going to be able to utilize that constructively.
Right.
So
there are people out there that are really stuck in that pattern of fear. They're just afraid to look inside. That's like the biggest thing I find when I'm working with people. I do a series of, it's a three class outline and each, or three topic outline, and each one has five classes underneath, and it's basically designed to walk you through a process. And, you know, throughout the whole reason the class is designed is that you've got somebody with you to go through the whole process. But it is about understanding. And I find that, you know, people that are willing to look inside have the greatest rewards. When they're really willing to explore themselves, they just so come out on top. Their lives change. They just become happier. Things just start moving for them.
Yeah. When you getting ideas is great. But if you don't take action on those ideas, if you don't try to, like, take that step of trying to implement those ideas into your life, they're not going to do you any good. Mm-hmm. And that is where this idea of courage comes in. And you, I was going to comment when you said that you did the exercises in the book. See, that's one of the things that really makes people successful, okay, is when they have the ability to read something, see an interesting idea, and then take action on it. Do something about it, you see,
mm-hmm.
rather than just read, passively read. And the reason why I'm talking about health, happiness, and success is because you really derive health from learning to deal with anger, which means saying no to what doesn't do you good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You derive happiness from being able to say yes to what does, and you derive success from being able to tackle the challenges of life by making tough decisions. Make sense?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it is. When I was younger, after I had my son, I was a single mom, and I'd never really lived by myself. And here I was with this young child, this infant, in this home in a neighborhood that wasn't the greatest, but it was what I could afford at the time. So at night, I would make myself, if I felt fear, I would make myself get up and walk around the house. And today, you know, I'm not afraid to stay alone. I mean, people are like, oh, gosh, you know, your husband goes away and, you know, you're there by yourself while he's gone on these trips. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't bother me. I mean, you know, whereas I have a sister who will not, she won't stay in the house alone with the lights turned off. You know, so, I mean, it's just funny. She doesn't like to be alone during the day. And you know, I'm very glad that I have been a person that's not afraid to look inside. And, you know, I feel fortunate. I do count that among my blessings that I'm not afraid to look at what's going on with myself.
Yeah, and, like, this actually, the fear was one of the first ones I tackled. And it's, I have a motto. I refuse to live my life in fear. I refuse to let fear rule my choices. So, like, I was in the air the week after 9/11. Flying to Canada. I thought, you know, okay, so what? You know, my thought was I'm gonna have more chances of dying in a car accident than I do in of dying in a terrorist attack, so why not? You see? That's just the way I am. It's like and like I said, fear turns into excitement when you tackle it, right?
Right. That's true. And, you know, really, you know, I would encourage people to look around. I laugh when people in my area say that they're afraid to go to another country or they're afraid to fly or, you know, any fear, because we don't live very far from Washington, D.C., and we're not very – I personally am a hop, skip, and a jump from a nuclear power plant. I mean, I'm like, we couldn't be in a more dangerous spot, people. You know, we're 40 miles from the nation's capital, and there's a nuclear power plant around the corner, so – you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's a perspective. It really is all about perspective. And, you know, people get too familiar and too comfortable in the dysfunction.
Yeah, and if you one of the ways you do this is by taking something that you're scared of, that other people do, right? Because other people fly to other countries or whatever, and make yourself do it. You see, you do it anyway. And the more you do that, the more self-confidence you gain.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. Well, we have about 5 minutes remaining. Is there anything else that you would like to make sure that you get across to our listeners that you want them to know?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book, before I get in really strongly into the three emotions, is something that has bugged me for a long time, because there was I kind of wrestled with, you know, there's a popular saying among a lot of people that we create our own reality. You know, you heard that, right?
Yes.
And as I pondered that a lot, I actually came up with, I think, a better way to express that. and that is we create our own illusions. Reality is what reality is. One of the things I tackle in this book is the idea that gravity operates whether you want it to or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you step off a cliff, you're choosing to go down because that's the direction you're going to go. You can't just say, well, I want to rise when I step off cliffs, and that's my choice, and that's my reality. I'm sorry, you step off the cliff, you're going to go down. Okay, so what happens is, in our mind, we create an idea of the way the world is supposed to be, and then we doggedly do these behaviors expecting the world to respond the way we think it should, and it doesn't. And that's why part of this is the process of waking up and looking inside and going, where did some of these things come from? You know, like, one of the things I point out is, you know, we have beliefs like that if I have more money, I would be happier. If I was more famous, I would be happier. If I was, you know, what's another big one?
If I had that right relationship.
If I had that right relationship, I would be happy, blah, blah, blah. But what we don't understand is that the motivation behind how we pursue that will actually determine the outcome of whether it brings us happiness or not. Look at how many wealthy people are unhappy. I mean, I see a lot of images of, you know, very wealthy people that don't look happy to me at all, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, just in the news lately, that Johnson heir, that from Johnson & Johnson, the heir, was, you know, she was not a happy camper.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that I couldn't be wealthy and be happy. That's fine. But the wealth itself is not going to guarantee me happiness. Look at how many famous people, look at actors and actresses, how many of them have totally screwed up lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So does being famous necessarily equal being happy? Okay? And how many times do you have, you know, relationships that are actually miserable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the key here in understanding this is that there are kind of rules, there are principles that you can learn about the way things work, that when you start, you know, choosing certain courses of action based on certain motivations, it will lead you to what you really want, which is the emotional payoff of having that happiness and that good feeling. So one of the little things I've learned to do is when I find myself faced with difficult situations or whatever, I sit with things and I pray and I ask to be guided to the choice that will bring me peace. So basically what I'm saying is I want the choice that when I choose that course of action, I feel at peace inside of myself. And I know that when I find a choice, that when I think about it, I have a sense of peace inside, I know that's the right choice. Because my heart becomes my compass to guide my choices, so that I know that if I make the choice from a place that's happy and of peace, it will ultimately bring me more peace.
And that's a great, great example. And you guys can learn, anyone listening, you can learn more about this and explore more when Stephen has his book out. And can you give us the title of the book again, Stephen?
The title of the book is going to be The Heart's Key to Health, Happiness, and Success.
Uh-huh.
And they can go to my website, healityourself.com, and sign up for my newsletter, and I will be announcing when the book is done and be doing some webinars and things on it. So that's healityourself.com.
Right. And it's also, you can also link to Stephen from he'll be moved to the archives page on the main site of The Honoring Hour, which is www.thehonoringhour.com. And, of course, the archives will all be in Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to it over and over again. And, Stephen, when do you expect the book to be out?
My target date right now is to have the book published in April or May.
Perfect. So we will definitely be looking forward to it. Thank you so much for being on here today. You're wonderful.
You're welcome.
Great information. Just want to remind you that our next show will be February 9th, and we'll be having Suzanne Ward and Matthew tell us about heaven. Thanks again for joining us, and thanks for listening to The Honoring Hour.